Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's in the Video Poker Hall of Fame, and he has written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the Video Poker for Winners computer software. Michael Shackelford is the force behind the websites Wizard of Odds, Wizard of Vegas, and Wizard of Macau. An actuary by profession, Michael has been analyzing the whole gamut of casino games since 1995. His Wizard of Odds website explains the best strategies for 140 different casino games. Michael is also the author of Gambling 102, The Best Strategies for All Casino Games, and is a former adjunct professor of gaming math at UNLV. The goal of the show is that, by listening, you will be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Mike.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Mike Shackelford.
We have two guests tonight. First, we have sports handicapper Steve Fezzik talking about making money betting on the upcoming football season. Second, we have attorney Brandon Phillips talking about the Atlantic City Golden Nugget Mini Baccarat $1.5 million non-shuffle. Usually we have our guest on in about 15 minutes after the start of the broadcast, but today we're going to start early because Fezzik is being interviewed while attending to a sleeping baby. While he thinks there's a good chance the baby will remain asleep, should she not, Steve will stop the interview immediately, go do what he has to do, and we'll carry on, and sooner or later Steve will come back and say, I'm back, and then we'll go back to him. Anyway, that's the plan. So, Steve Fezzik, by training, is an actuary. Now, that means he has to be really good at math. He's one of the top football and basketball bettors in Las Vegas. To do this, you really, really have to be good at math. Every year, the Las Vegas Hilton, now LVH, has a $1,500 entry fee NFL football tournament that attracts the top professional bettors. They bet against the spread. Winning the contest once is very impressive. There has only been one player who has won it twice, and that's our guest tonight. Steve Fezzik, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Oh, thanks for the introduction, Bob, and I appreciate you introducing me as someone who has betting skills instead of a handicapper, because that really was my bread and butter for years. I was a much better guy just finding the really great bets versus, you know, really digging in and being a great handicapper, and there is a difference.
What? All right. What is that difference?
I think a bettor is a guy that's just trying to go out there and make the money. I think Frank B. once said it best, you know, we measure results as gamblers by in our wallets and, you know, who's winning, who's losing. And someone might argue, you know, it's low-lying fruit, but, for, you know, for years you could just run around Nevada and find numbers that were so rogue, so out of whack that you could pretty much bet them blindly. I think Colin Castor once said, you know, handicapping is a complete waste of time when playing against certain books. You just spot the horrific mistakes and bet those.
Well, that's pretty intelligent gambling with an edge as far as I'm concerned. Now, Tim Tebow, last year quarterbacked the Denver Bronco to some amazing success. This year he's entered the New York Jets in that probably fiasco situation. Do you see any... Anyway, handicappers can make money off of Tebow mania this year?
Well, I think pretty much everybody that I know has Jets under 8.5 wins in their pocket that's paying any attention. You could see the team is in disarray, and we really don't care so much. Are the Jets going to win 10 games or 6 games? You're watching them in preseason. They have their throwaway game against the Bengals, and then they always do well week 2 against the Giants, and then they get just get destroyed against the Giants week 2. And then in the world's greatest spot, and I was on them and I lost, they lost outright to Carolina 17-12. So I don't know if it's as much a Tebow as the Jets clearly look so bad that everyone right after that weeks 2 and week 3, and you don't have much time here, Bob. You got to act while the market hasn't reacted. And you could get the Jets under 8.5, and now the Jets are under 8.5, lay $1.60. And now probably the value is gone. You don't know if they're playing possum. I will say, like, my critics say, oh, Fezzik doesn't watch the games. He doesn't pay attention. And, you know, I'm going to be politically correct. I'm not going to bash anyone, but they're idiots. I mean, I'm watching these games. I'm taping these games. I'm going back to them. Tebow's delivery is horrendous. He brings the ball down to below his waist to throw the ball. You cannot be an effective quarterback that way. It takes him like 0.47 seconds, I think, to deliver the ball versus 0.37 for a normal quarterback. He's going to fumble more, and he can't throw the ball accurate. You know, he doesn't have a lick of accuracy, and his wonderlic is 22. So you have a stupid quarterback that runs the ball well.
Wait, 22 is not stupid.
Oh, wonderlic 22 is quite bad. Below 20 is really, I think Ryan Fitzpatrick is like in the 40s, and Andrew Luck's 37. Average is like 28. For a white quarterback, he's a very dumb white quarterback. Yes.
And Vince Young had a 6.
Well, let's be fair to Vince Young. He retook it and did much better. But what happened with Vince is, I'm sure it's a time test. And if you're going slow and you're not schooled to skip all these questions that are harder, then you only get to answer like 5 questions. So that's not fair to anyone to get a 6. Pretty much any score that's 10 or below is really a 10 because you randomly answer all the questions and I think you get an 8. So I'm going to give Vince, you know, a pass in that. I don't think he's as bad as a 6.
Well, yes. The Bills gave him a pass too. All right.
Okay. Yes. So I have to say that I can't stand the Tim Tebow fans, and it would give me pleasure to root against him. But, of course, I'm not going to do it unless it's a good bet. But one trick in my bag of tricks is to bet against the squares. And once in a while you see a situation like this where the mass public is just all coming in on one side. For example, on Tiger Woods or something like that. The squares like to bet on the big name. So, is this something that you look for? Do you think that's why there was a good play there on the Jets against them for a while there? And are there any other season win bets that you like that are still out there?
Well, the squares are going to bet against Tebow because they're looking at how bad he is. So it's a question, are the sharps, the rectangles, and the squares all going to be correct, you know, when they're looking at him? And it drives me crazy when they hear he's the hardest working quarterback and all this nonsense. If he was such a hard working quarterback, he would have prepped for fixed his delivery, and he would have prepped for his wonderlic in the draft. Clearly, he's not a hard working quarterback to have these deficiencies. It's all propaganda. As far as the season win numbers, if you look back on all the releases, I think I gave out like 10 teams at LVA Sports throughout the summer, and now I'm really stuck to try to find you a bet because, sure, I could tell you go play Baltimore under 10, but you don't get to lay $1.15 anymore. Now you got to lay $1.60, and it's such a significant difference. I would tell everyone that there should be plenty of good bets going forward. I really don't see very many good bets at all. Really what you need, but probably the best bet I could recommend would you could still get the Colts over 5, lay $1.40. Now, I gave it out when it was over 5, lay $1.20. But I do think that that's an example where Andrew Luck is so much better than our concerns with a rookie quarterback, and he showed so much better. Although Indianapolis does have injuries on the defense, I still think that's a bet you could make that has, you know, solid plus expected value.
Now, we're going to have, in addition to Andrew Luck, 4 additional rookie quarterbacks in week 1 of the NFL. Does this present handicappers with extra opportunities or problems?
Certainly opportunities. I think it's an in-running gold mine. I'm a huge live wagering guy now, and if you ask me how good was Cam Newton going to be, I said, well, Cam Newton's going to be terrible, and I was completely wrong. Cam Newton was quite good from the get-go. So I think, you know, when we're looking at some of these quarterbacks and how they do, I think Robert Griffin probably might be similar to Cam Newton and that he might be quite good, he might not. And I think you look at his first series and how he's doing against the Saints, and I think then you can make a much better prediction and a much better informed bet by betting after the game has started and the like. And I think the Miami Dolphins, and everyone thinks this, that Tannehill is going to be a disaster. Way down on them, I think that you could probably still bet. I gave this out at under 43.5, but Miami-Houston, I think Miami scored 40 points in the preseason. Tannehill is going to be a bad quarterback. He can't even tell you which teams are in which divisions. which again shows me a lack of passion for the game, a lack of knowledge of the game, and it would almost be like a blackjack player that didn't know that insurance paid even money.
Doesn't.
Teach him how to play.
Insurance doesn't pay even money, by the way. But
and
okay.
Pardon me?
Insurance doesn't pay even money. It pays 2-1.
That's correct. See, exactly making my point. And by the way, if you go ahead and try to insure for less, it's an excellent exercise to do sometimes, because I'd say maybe one out of 20 dealers will short pay you, and maybe one out of 100 dealers will overpay you. And I think it's one of my favorite things to do when it's close to the count, is to insure for less, just for fun, because it's never right mathematically, but it's not all that wrong either.
But for like $78 or something.
If the true count is like right on the plus three, but I digress because I'm terrible at blackjack.
All right.
Let's go back to sports.
All right.
Okay, back to sports, but a different angle is I know that you're a prop bettor like I am, and two of my favorite props are under 3.5 field goals and first score to be a touchdown. And last season, I got killed on both of those. And before last season, the average number of field goals per game was right around 3.0. And last year, it was more like 3.5. So was this a statistical abnormality, or is there something different about the game that's causing this glut of field goals?
Yeah, you probably have a picture of David Akers of the 49ers on your wall. He's throwing darts at him because I think the guy kicked two or three every single game. I think what's happened is that the 50-50 run-pass ratio in the NFL is going the way of the dinosaur, and they're throwing the ball 60% of the time. More incomplete passes, more players going out of bounds. There's more plays in the game. There's more scoring in the game. And so there's more touchdowns and more field goals, and I think that the NFL coaches haven't learned yet that you shouldn't be kicking field goals in fourth and two situations. So you see more of them, the old brethren keeps kicking field goals, but the field goal kickers have become such specialists that I think the overall average, I don't have this off the top of my head, but I'm sure it used to be as low as maybe only 67%. It's probably, you know, much closer to the 80% right now, and so they don't miss these field goals. And I think you've got kickers that are kicking, you know, when they're kicking 50 yarders, you fully expect them to make it now, and so that's probably a combination of factors. So I think you'll probably keep losing on those bets, and of course, I think no secret, everybody knows you want a really, really windy forecast, or a really, really cold forecast, and then under 3.5 becomes almost a lock, well, not a lock, but a lock to be a positive expectation bet in those circumstances.
We're starting the season with substitute referees. Do you see this as likely to affect the over or under totals of the games in some handicappable way?
You'd think that they try to keep the flags in their pockets, and they're probably being schooled, don't throw too many flags and disrupt the game, which means the smart teams like Belichick and New England will instruct his offensive linemen to hold a little bit more. And they'll get away with it a little bit more. I think all those penalties are a little less obvious. So the running teams probably should have a little bit more of an advantage. These are all slight things. And the passing teams might miss a big play when they throw deep, and there's always some contact, and the yellow canary doesn't come flying for the 40-yard pass interference penalty. So I would think it might benefit the running teams a little bit more, but this is all, you know, just a theory. Not sure.
All right. While I was preparing for this interview, I stumbled upon a website called stevefezik.com. And for the benefit of the listeners, this website has a picture of you, and it offers an $800 tout service. And it really appears to be a representation of you and your business. And I found out later that it's a complete scam and you have nothing to do with it. So have you done anything to try to stop this site? And can you tell me more about what's going on with that?
Sure. I call Anthony Curtis on it like every month, and you know, we've done enough due diligence that any prudent man that goes ahead and Yahoo's or Google's me and it comes up will immediately discover this. So I would say the only people being scammed are those that aren't doing enough due diligence. But you know, that's not enough. Trying to pursue legal action against people is not the easiest thing in the world. But we're still going to go after him. We have gone after him, and we will try to shut him down. I might add that over the past couple years, I've just been coin flipping in my own picks and not winning, and I've cost that guy tens of thousands of dollars. So there's a silver lining in my lack of handicapping acumen the last couple years.
William Hill, has been a bookie in England forever. Now he's moved to Nevada. Does this change the landscape for handicapping in any meaningful way?
Well, handicapping always stays the same. I would say for betting, it's bad for bettors because we just took three outs. You know, Leroy's, Lucky's, and Cal Neva, and now we have one out. I am pleased with what I'm seeing. They're taking much larger bets than certainly what, you know, Leroy's or Lucky's was taking previously. So I'm cautiously optimistic about it. I think it's always difficult when you have a takeover and then you plan changes down the road, but you don't make them initially. That's always a concern. And they really didn't have time to do that. So I think it's wait and see. I will say there's a mobile app that you can load up on William Hill, and it works quite well. And you can go ahead and bet from, you know, your pajamas at home with that application. I do see that as a trend that's going to occur more and more with books. And it really shows how some of the old school dinosaurs, like the Harrah's, how far behind the curve they were, that they never got their act together to get things like that approved.
Do we have to start wearing pajamas now?
Okay, change of topic. Correct me if I'm wrong, but the Cantor sports books and the M, I think, offer in-progress wagering. I mean, I know lots of places do it at halftime, but I think they do it at more frequent points during the game. But do you have any kind of basic strategy for in-progress wagering for the recreational bettors out there?
Yeah, and I wish they would call it continuous wagering when they put a lineup after every play, and call it live wagering when they put a lineup after every timeout. But their name for it, yes, is in-run wagering. And I think it's going to become bigger and bigger and bigger. And Cantor's, unlike Harrah's, they're way ahead of the curve. They recognize how great that this market will be, and it's still something they're working the kinks out. But I would say, oh, there's some people that go out there and say, well, you can't make a living betting on the NFL because how could you? You probably only can find two or three good bets every week on the NFL, which is just mind-boggling to me. Someone could be so out of touch because in a typical single NFL game, if it's a Sunday night or a Monday night game, any pro is going to have multiple bets just on that game playing it during the live wagering.
So do you have any tips like, you know, you should bet on the underdog, the favorite, anything like that?
It all depends. It's complicated. It's one of those things. It's easier for me to use a college basketball analogy than to actually give out stuff in football. If you see there's 3 minutes to play, make it 2 minutes to play, and you see a team hit a three and they go up 12 on another team, make it 14. That's a situation where there's no way you can say you've got the world's greatest computer and you're running all these algorithms, and it's just all a bunch of gobbledygook nonsense. It's like books can say that, that's fine, it makes for a good story. But the truth is, what we need to do is to look at the coach, and we need to hear whether he's yelling press and foul or whether he's yelling don't foul, when his team's down 14, because that's going to impact whether the game goes over or whether the game goes under. And so I think some women's tournaments, I've seen teams foul down 17 with a minute and a half to go. They just don't give up in the women's NCAA tournament. So that's an extreme example, but it shows how, you know, really coach-dependent and team-dependent certain circumstances, you know, can be, whether a team but in the NFL, that certainly happens. A team can, if they're down 17 with a minute to play, a few teams will just kind of give up, whereas, you know, most teams will try desperately still to get a score.
Okay.
You mentioned Anthony Curtis, so I'm assuming you're still associated with the Las Vegas Advisor. How, if we wanted to get Steve Fezzik information from the Las Vegas Advisor, how would that work?
Yeah, just go over online to lvasports.com. That's where I can be found. I think we're still charging for we have a private message board. It's $25 a month, and if that's too steep for anyone to pay, they certainly can just get my words of wisdom or lack thereof on Twitter at I tweet under fezziksports.com.
All right. Statistically speaking, you mentioned that football has been higher scoring lately. Do you expect any other changes this year compared to previous seasons?
Well, I like to use the preseason as somewhat of a predictor of what's going to happen when the season starts.
And what has the preseason told you so far?
Preseason's been high scoring. So now the question is it just – it is a fascinating question because everyone knows week one and two in the NFL are under weeks, and money always comes in on the under. And last year – The preseason saw unprecedented scoring weeks 2 and 3, lots and lots of scoring compared to normal. And then week 1 saw, I think it went 12 and 3, the overs went. And anyone who was following me noticed I released it a whole bunch of unders during the summer, panicked when the preseason, when I saw what was going on in the preseason, played them all back over and pretty much pushed out on those plays. And this year it's an eerily similar situation where money came on all the unders on all these NFL week 1 totals, and here comes preseason's week 2 and 3, and here comes a whole bunch of scoring, and now people are trying to figure out, has the preseason changed? Has early in the season changed? Because last year was a lockout, and everyone said the reason there was so much scoring week 1 and 2 was the lockout and the defenses were behind the offenses. Now there is no lockout. We should revert back to where we were. But, boy, all the scoring in weeks 2 and 3 of preseason now make us question what's going on.
Do you have any comments on any aspect of Bountygate, where the Saints were heavily penalized for putting out contracts on opposing players? Or allegedly so.
I think it's pretty clear they were unfortunate enough to get caught. I think the media is very naive, and people are very naive about how often teams get caught with things. I've heard so many stories about how we have to regulate and legalize all the sports betting throughout the country. And clearly, all the gamblers say, clearly that's the correct thing to do, and certainly it would help me, so I should be saying that. But I'm not so sure it's such a good idea. I think that there's been like 5 point-shaving scandals that have been uncovered over the past 10 years, and for those 5, there may well have been like 50 others that weren't uncovered, that were on a smaller scale or done, with less ability to detect it. So I think a lot of these NFL teams had bounty systems in place. It just didn't get caught, and I think there's probably eight or ten teams right now, and maybe 5 to 6 universities are saying, whew, we did what Penn State, we had a similar type of skeleton in the closet. They just didn't catch us. And I really think that you get all the headlines when you get caught, but there's got to be, for every one situation that's uncovered, there's got to be 5 or 6 that aren't.
Yeah, Penn State and the Saints are a totally different thing, though.
I think they're both, they're completely different, but they do, they both involve cover-ups of totally inappropriate behavior. Yes.
So there's many more we don't know about. Okay. Change of topic. So I hear you were a high school chess champion, and is that true? And if so, how has that helped you in what you do today?
It's not true. There was someone in my state was a chess master, and I was a Class B, and I was lucky enough to play well enough in the state championship to finish second. So I got up to candidate master, but I never got up to master. To answer the question, though, I am a good chess player. How did it help me? I think when you're playing chess, the amount of study that it requires really it trains your mind to have a level of focus. And as a guy that currently has ADD all over the place from playing 4 poker hands at once online, I go back to those chess days, and I liken it to when you're doing in-run wagering during a game. You've got 3 hours of the game, and you need to be constantly analyzing and watching it for the situation where the odds maker puts up a bad number. And in chess, if you're playing speed chess for an entire game, okay, it only lasts 10 minutes, but you could be playing 6 straight games of speed chess, and a really, really good chess player will literally play 8 games in 3 hours over and over and over again, and he will never make an egregious mistake. He'll make mistakes, but they're minor mistakes. And so I think that becoming very, very good at any game is probably something that will benefit you in your gambling career in any aspect.
So Bob mentioned in the introduction that you are an actuary, and as you know, I am too. And I found that preparing and passing the actuary exams was very helpful in my gaming analysis that came after that. Do you have any thoughts on that? When did you finish the exams?
Yeah, it's been a long time. 1995, and I did become an FSA, but I'm not actively participating in the career anymore. I don't think the later exams really mattered. The mathematical ones, certainly the operations research and the probability and statistics ones, are the ones that were the most critical. And there's just admired as a professor at Baldwin Wallace. He's a handicapper, and I love the he gave a homework assignment to his class. He said, "All right, I want you to go flip a coin 300 times, record all the events, heads and tails, bring it back, and turn it in. It's 5% of your grade." The entire class failed because
They cheated.
They all cheated, right. They flipped the coins 11 times, said this is nonsense, and they started going heads, tails, tails, head, 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 tails, head, 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 tail, 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 head, tail, tail, head. You get the idea. And, and it turns out that, as you know, a random distribution is going to look a lot different than a distribution where you've got you know, the heads and tails evening out and no real long streak. So I love that story that he told.
Yeah, do you know specifically how he tested? Because as you know, you should expect a change in from the last outcome 50% of the time. And do you think that the average person is going to do more or less frequently than that?
Oh, they'll do it more frequently. I think that goes back to the Peanuts one time. Linus took a 10-question true-false, and he said the first answer is going to be true to start the test off on a positive note. The second one will be false to break the pattern. The third question, of course, has to be false again to... so you can't just go alternate back and forth. And then the fourth answer has to be true to get back into balance. He finished the test. It was 10 questions. He got only two of them correct. Charlie Brown said, Linus, don't you think your whole strategy was completely flawed? To which he responded, no, I just should have answered the first question false.
What rule changes in the NFL are going to make the biggest difference handicapping-wise this year?
Oh, there's no, I don't think there's anything going on with rules changes this year. I know the college games are going to kick off from the 35, and if you kick it out of the end zone, the players are going to get the ball on the 25. So you're going to see college teams figure it out that they should be looking to get their kickers, instead of booming it through the end zone, to try to kick it higher in the air and bring it down right on the goal line. And so you'll certainly see some stuff going on with that. I think the biggest change on the pros really is going to be the replacement referees. And like I said, if I was a coach, I would be teaching my linemen to cheat a little bit more and grab a little more jersey and not be obvious on it. And things that it would take a savvy referee to go ahead. On the defensive side, I think I'd be instructing my defenders to be, you know, chucking these wide receivers on the line of scrimmage a little bit to the point where a penalty could be called, because I'm confident that they're not going to call penalties that are borderline, that aren't where the player is not holding the ball.
So is there a new overtime rule which should make slightly higher scoring, or is that enough to matter?
Yeah, no, it is enough to matter. I'm sorry, I forgot about it. It's worth about point. We priced it out like 0.4 and 0.3 rather points per game. Scoring is going to increase because when a team gets the ball to start the overtime, and they drive down and kick a field goal, the game will not be over. If they score a touchdown, the game's over. They win by 6. And the other team, then, if you kick a field goal, can get one possession back. Still not sure. I believe if they turn it over, the game is over, so you can't get a pick 6 to lose by 9. But I'm not entirely sure of that, and I'm not sure what would happen in the extreme example. Let's say they went ahead and got pushed back, and then they fumbled in their end zone, and the other team recovered in their end zone, whether that's going to result in the world's worst beat where you have a team getting plus 8, and you can lose it in overtime. I once lost in USC Arizona State game like that. So I'm not, but long story short, there'll be a little more scoring. So the 3 in the NFL used to be worth, on or off the 3, used to be worth 23 cents. It's going to be worth just a few pennies less than that now. Of course, worth more if there's on a low total, a little less on a high total. And the 6, the incident of teams winning by 6, will be a little bit more common, because you'll see some teams win in overtime by 6. So that number suddenly becomes a little more valuable.
Why 6? Well, I would think 3.
Well, it was 3, but when a team wins the opening coin toss and they're driving down the field, they're not going to just run the ball in the middle 3 times in the red zone. They're going to try to get the touchdown to win the game by 6 with the first possession in overtime now.
Well, yeah, but the other team will come back and
nope, game, score 6. Game's over if they didn't really fix the overtime rules. If you receive
no, the first team scores 3, but the second team would come back and score 6, which would make it 3
then
the other way.
Then it would still be 3. But if the first team scores a touchdown, the game ends and they win by 6.
That's correct.
Okay, what is your opinion of Dr. Bob and all of his many minions?
And make this good, because this is your last question.
Dr. Bob is a complete genius, way smarter than me, way better with his handicapping, his database across the board. Dr. Bob is such a better handicapper than me, we cannot even compare one another. The man has no understanding of the betting marketplace, however. In fact, I'd go as far as to say he's a complete Pollyanna guy that has never learned what's going on out there. And he seems to have his he just seems completely clueless that if he makes a game 15 and the market is 10, that he can't release it, that you should go ahead and lay 10 and it's fine to lay it up to 12.5 as being a really fine play and having value, and whereas the true number probably is somewhere between these two numbers. So I see him and some of his followers as like they'll give out a play and they'll have no line tolerance at all. They'll say you can lay an extra 2 or 3 points and it's still going to win, despite the fact that, similar to my results, his results have certainly eroded on plays he's given out against widely available lines. I think he's up below 52% in the NFL the past 5 years. Hey, I can relate. And so I think that the difference between Dr. Bob and I is he's probably I know he's a much better pure handicapper, but he really needs a professional better to, like, start to educate him on the betting marketplace and the changes that have occurred since 2006.
Very good. Thank you very much, and thank your baby for staying asleep. We appreciate that.
Okay, if I give you one play before I go?
Oh, please.
Oh, of course.
I'm not doing college football at all.
As long as it's not... it's not tonight, because this is going to, we're actually taping this noonish on Thursday and broadcasting it Thursday evening. So
no worries.
All right.
Here's the situation, and I'm not doing any college football, so how can I give out this play, because I'm an actuary and I'm supposed to be good at this. Texas A&M, I heard some people say play them under 7 wins. It's probably a good wager. I looked at it. I said, too busy. Didn't bother with it. Then Texas A&M got their game postponed because Isaac was barreling into the coast. So they're going to play that game at Louisiana Tech in October during the bye week. But the problem with that is that this is going to have a crippling effect on them more than likely in the second half of the season, because now they got to play every game all year long without a bye week. And now they got to play 5 out of 6 games on the road during that stretch in October. So how much is that worth? How does that impact their chance of winning that Louisiana Tech game? Probably not at all. How does it impact and how well they'll do the following week against Florida? Probably going to make it less likely that they can beat Florida. How are they going to do in all these sandwich games around what should have been their bye week? Well, that's certainly going to have a big impact on them. And so clearly the betting marketplace has to react to this. It has to be worth 20, 30, 40 cents. This horrible schedule Texas A&M has now, and the market barely blinked. So it will blink. It will react. But for now, yeah, play. You can still find Texas A&M under 7.5, lay $1.80, or play them under 7, lay $1.10. Both are winners, I think.
Very good.
So it's under 7.5, -180, under 7, -110?
Yeah, I think a half point on A&M is probably worth about 70, 75 cents here.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the hot tip.
Thank you, gentlemen. Bye.
All right, Michael, what did we learn today?
I did not know that Steve is an FSA actuary, and that means that he is a higher actuary than I am. I'm just an ASA. I just took the mathematical tests and quit.
F is higher than A. Now, yes. I went to school. I know A is higher than F.
No, the F stands for fellow, and I'm an associate. And those extra exams he took are terribly boring and require memorizing just tons of stuff. So I tip my hat to him for that. But more practically, I appreciated his answer on the field goals, and I was already leaning towards just ignoring those this season, but now I'm definitely going to, except when it gets to the Super Bowl.
Uh-huh. I hope you have it figured out by then, because I may be a partner with you in the Super Bowl, and just try to make sure there's no safeties this year. That kind of hurt last year. All right.
Don't bring that up.
Okay, I won't. Never mind. Now, we have a new visitor to our show. Brandon Phillips is a Las Vegas attorney. So tonight we're starting a possibly recurring 5-minute segment on various legal aspects related to gambling. So our topic tonight is at the Golden Nugget in Atlantic City. Last April, the casino purchased what they thought were pre-shuffled cards from Jamaco, a large reputable playing card company. The players noticed the cards were not shuffled randomly, and they began making max bets, $5,000 a hand, winning something like 41 hands in a row, for a net win of $1.5 million, about a third of which has been paid and two-thirds not yet. One guy was back room beating up a little bit. Suits are flying back and forth. So, Brandon Phillips, welcome to the show, and what more can you tell us about this?
Well, first off, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate being on your radio show. I am a local Las Vegas attorney. I handle business law. I do a lot of that, personal injury, some estate planning, and also some real estate law. And just for your listeners, if they call in, I'll handle their traffic tickets for free. They can reach me at 795-0097. Again, 795-0097.
And if they're listening in Maryland, you're going to go to Maryland to handle their traffic cases there.
No, they need to come here first, and if they're here on the strip getting one, then...
They have to get the ticket in Nevada. All right, so that's a 702 number. All right, so let's go.
Well, you know, first off, I think one of the very first and maybe obvious to some people is that this is not a cheating offense. This is, I mean, in Nevada, this would not be termed cheating. And that's easy to tell because of, if we look at the situation of, let's compare it to card counting, that is not illegal. And the definition, according to Nevada revised statute, cheating means to alter the elements of chance, method of selection, or criteria by changing the result of the game, the amount of the frequency of the payment in the game, or the value of the wagering instrument, or the value of the wagering credit. So they didn't do any of that. They didn't cheat on this, so therefore they haven't committed any illegal act. And from that, the statute, and the reason they haven't done that is the statute here fails to address casino error. And the error, therefore, fails to alert a person that they were committing a crime. So a reasonable person wouldn't understand, hey, I'm taking advantage of what seems to be obvious. The casino is making an error, therefore I'm committing a crime. And since the statute doesn't specifically address that, we know that there's no chance of them, or little chance of them, actually receiving any criminal prosecution on this matter.
So you think the players are going to win?
I think they're going to win. I don't think they're going to receive any crime, criminal prosecution. So there's two sides of a law, or two sides of the law in the court system: the criminal side and then the civil side. And this, what's being brought, the casino bringing the action against the players, is brought on the civil side. But I think we should have first addressed that this is not a crime. It may be resulting in some civil damages, but not necessarily a crime.
So the casino has not paid the players in full yet. And do you think that they should?
I think until the casino can prove that they, you know, prove their case, win their case, if they have a chance of actually winning, I think they are entitled to pay the players. The players won playing their game, and therefore the players should have been paid. The casino can always bring an action to, you know, try to get the money back, but the casino offered the game and the players played, the players won, therefore there was no illegal activity. And therefore, I think the casino should pay. Now, I don't know. I've never had an actual case where I don't know exactly what occurs when a player is caught counting cards. Does he get to still walk with his money? Does the casino hold his money? I'm not 100% for sure on that.
The vast majority of the time, they get to walk with the money, as they should.
And I think, you know, I know this wasn't counting cards. We're sure that they weren't counting cards. But in some type of theory, they knew what was coming, with like a potential person that is counting cards. So there's similarities in that, and therefore, if a card counter is going to walk away with his money, these players should walk away with their money.
Now, I'm sorry to bring up talk that happened before the show, but I thought that you were a little bit sympathetic to the casino side, that it was not a random game, and maybe they should at least fight it in the courts to not have to pay.
You know, I did do some research on the case, and I do think that the casino does have merits to bring a case. Are they going to win? I'm not 100% sure of that. I would lean towards probably not, because there just has never, from all the research I could do, I never found a case that specifically addressed the situation. And the theory that the casino probably is bringing most of their claim under is the theory of unjust enrichment, meaning the players basically benefited financially, in this circumstance, benefited financially from something that they knew was wrong. So they knew that there was an error going on, and they benefited financially. And that basically turns back to unjust enrichment. Is that occurs when the benefit by the defendant to the plaintiff, and that's exactly what happened here. There was no reason for it to occur, and the players actually knew that the error was occurring on the casino's part.
15 seconds left on your segment. If this happened in Michigan in an Indian casino, do you think the casinos would get to keep the money?
I think the casinos would get to keep the money. I do, yeah, unfortunately. But hopefully the players end up, I think maybe the players can walk away with the money. And I think there's some theories behind that.
I think an Indian casino would win in any state.
Not in Nevada, because there aren't any.
There's the Avi.
That is true. All right.
And gaming does not oversee the Avi, if I'm not mistaken.
And Avi is real close to Laughlin, for those of you who aren't from this area. All right.
Well, thanks, Brandon.
Thanks for having me on.
We'll,
I really appreciate it.
We'll have you. We'll see you next week. Give you another chance to work on some legal aspect of gaming news. All right, Michael. A few months ago, you told us that you were developing a video poker software product for the iPhone and iPad. What's happening on this front?
I'm happy to say that is finally out there. If you go on the iPad or iPhone and search for Video Poker Wizard, you will find my app for sale for $9.99. It is much like Win Poker. You can play a host of games, and it will tell you if you make an error if you want it to. It can analyze just about any pay table, as you can save pay tables that you create. And basically, it's a video poker trainer. And if you want to improve your game with a tutor, it's right there. I know there are other similar products out there, but I wanted to jump into that pool too.
Very good. So I've not seen it yet. I will be seeing it soon, and I will be reviewing it on the air. It would surprise me if it's not going to be a rave review. I like the stuff that you and JB come up with. I assume he's involved in this somehow.
JB is pretty much the star of the show. He created the whole thing with some guidance from me on the features and appearances. But no, he is my heavy lifter, and he deserves all the credit and any blame for any bugs that may be found.
All right, so it's JB's fault. All right, so I'll try to come up with a list of JB's mistakes. Very good. All right, now the South Point has more than 10,000 video poker games, returning more than 99%. That's more than anybody else. On Mondays through Thursdays, there'll be the opportunity to earn free lunch and dinner buffets for a modest amount of points in September, which basically starts this coming Monday. Well, September starts before that, but Monday through Thursday starts Monday. This coming Monday, Labor Day, 2x points, midnight to midnight for video poker, 5x points for slots, no limits, no machine restrictions. South Point was the first casino approved by the Nevada Gaming Control Board to operate intrastate online poker games. There's a free site there now, southpointpoker.com, which will disappear when the real money site gets going. If you're a Nevada resident who also plays poker, it's probably a good idea to have at least a small presence on the free site, because you're probably going to get promotional offers when the real money site begins, and promotional offers on poker sites mean money. My next free semester of video poker classes begins in about 3 weeks on Tuesday, September 18th at noon at the South Point in the showroom. At the Palms, the weekly drawings take place Friday and Saturday evening, and they're trying something brand new this week. It's going to require some physicality. The first person who's drawn in there gets to throw a football through a hole. Now, if he gets one shot. If he does it from 20 feet, he gets $7,000. If he does it from 15 feet, $5,000. If he does it from 10 feet, $3,500. And if he misses any of them or refuses to do it, it's $2,500. So it may seem that twenty feet is get twice as much as you do from 10 feet, but actually you get 4.5 times as much. Because when you're guaranteed the 2,500, it means the shorter distance you're only playing for an extra 1,000, and from the longer distance you're playing for an extra 4,500. Although it's harder to hit it from longer distance, it's not 4.5 times as hard. So I would certainly try for the longer distance were I able to get that chance. I'm not sure how this is going to work. There's a lot of people aren't athletic, and throwing it in from 20 feet requires a certain amount of physicality. I know there were a lot of guys in my school who were told they throw like a girl. It was very humiliating when they were 16. I don't know how it's going to feel when they're 47 and get to throw football. If I get a chance, well, I used to be a pitcher on a slow-pitch softball team, so I can probably do it underhand and have a good shot at it, but got to be called first. Tomorrow is the last day of the free play on the PEW, Play, Earn, and Win, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And it's 0.25% up to $80,000 coin in. Starting Monday, the Monday, Wednesday, Friday PEW gifts for the first half have a do-it-yourself theme with things like tool belts and gift cards to Lowe's Home Improvement Store. Second half of the month will feature sports theme with gift cards to Sports Authority, balls, coolers, and other things you do when you're doing sportsy things. Until the end of the month, which means tomorrow, the monthly contest at videopoker.com is multi-strike. As of this morning, the top score so far, worth $500, is about 50,000 points. And 10th prize, the lowest they pay for, was 36,000 points. When you're playing only 100 hands at a time, this means you must get a $32,000 score, 32,000 point score, and the way to do that is to get 4,000 points on the top line of multi-strike. And even then, you still need at least another 4,000, and the odds are 20 to 1 against you or 50 to 1 against you of even getting the 4,000. So you have your work cut out for you, but if you're going to try it, triple-double bonus is your best shot because they have, in addition to Royals giving you 4,000 coins, four aces with a kicker also give you your coins. All right. We get letters at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. One theme we've had several emails about has to do with somebody wins a number of bets in a row and then calls in and said, what are the odds on this? Now, we have answered this question before, apparently not effectively, because we're still getting the questions. It makes no sense to talk about how likely a streak was after the fact. Let's say you had 10 wins in a row and each win was 50-50 shot. It's about 1,000 to 1 against you winning your next 10 times in a row. But for people who play a lot, you're actually a favorite to have that kind of streak sometime in your gambling career, and maybe several times in your gambling career. So the fact that you hit such a streak starting on April 17th or November 9th or whatever it was is not significant at all. Also, these streaks always start with a good result. So 10 in a row is actually 10 out of 11 or maybe 10 out of 12. But they phrase it 10 in a row because they want to make this number bigger and to make it more exciting. But it's meaningless. Michael, do you have any comment on that?
Yeah, that's a question I get a lot too, and usually people ask for the wrong reason. But, you know, it's easy to look back at any kind of a gambling session and find something unusual about it. And with internet gambling, it happens all the time that people find some sort of a coincidence and then claim that the casino was rigged and they got cheated. And that's not the correct way to make an argument. You have to declare what you're testing for before you start playing, not afterwards.
Very good. So last week, I wasn't here. Shirley and I were cruising the Alaska Inside Passage. The cruise was pleasant enough, but really, cruising is something I do to keep Shirley happy. And a happy wife makes for a happy life and all that. But I was sort of here because we had pre-taped an interview with Munchkin. But for the most part, Mike hosted the show by himself. Thank you, Shaq.
You're welcome.
By the way, if you didn't catch that show, do so. The Munchkin interview on team play and cheating, I think, was one of our best segments so far. So that was a very good show, and you should catch it if you haven't already. At the end of the broadcast, Michael presented his 10 commandments for gamblers. And I have a lot of issues with these. In fairness, they were probably written for the beginning non-advantage gambler. And I look at the world very differently. So we're not going to have time to discuss all of them, but we'll discuss a few and maybe get to a few more next week. First commandment was, thou shalt not cheat. And on his website, he says this is self-explanatory, doesn't need to say anything else about it. I don't know what this means. Even if it were rephrased to don't do anything illegal, there's a lot of gray areas. For example, I don't think the mini baccarat players in Atlantic City were cheating, but the casino does. A lot of advantage gambling opportunities are related to taking advantage of casino mistakes. If there was a promotion where a husband and wife both had a coupon for triple points, well, probably they both would play on Friday on his card and both play on Saturday on hers card. Is it against the rules? You betcha. Have I done this before? Maybe 200 times. I think most advantage gamblers would do that. So, Mike, what do you have to say about that?
Of course, there's always going to be gray areas where, you know, where does something become cheating? And I was only referring to the most egregious types of cheating, like capping a bet or marking cards. I was not referring to things like playing on your wife's player card. I think a good litmus test would be that if gaming would have the right to haul you off to jail for doing what you did, that would probably be cheating. But for playing on your wife's card, I view that as violating the casino's rules, but that doesn't mean that it's cheating.
Well, okay. So it's funny. As a teenager, my parents would tell you that I wasn't truthful all of the time. And I was not a choir boy by any means. And I actually, so the mindset of thinking on my feet, being able to lie with a straight face, has been useful in gambling. It's been useful as an author. Somebody who strictly did it by the book would have a harder time gambling. So I'm thinking the people with a slightly shadier past, everything else equal, will make better gamblers than the people with a straight and narrow path.
But I agree with you 100%. But I think that there's more to life than trying to maximize how much you make in the casino. And we talked about...
You're wrong about that, but go ahead.
Well, it's a matter of opinion, but we talked about the game show Friend or Foe.
Yes.
And we would play that different ways, and we don't need to go through that again, but I don't look at winning as the only thing I care about.
Yeah, there's another one has to do with always using good etiquette. There have been a number of cases on this show where we sometimes share questions with each other before we ask them on the air, and Mike has asked me to withdraw questions or rephrase them because he thought my questions weren't polite enough. And sometimes I acceded to that, and sometimes I said, I'm going to ask him anyway, because we have different... being polite is a good thing, but it is not the only thing. Sometimes you have to assert yourself. Sometimes if I'm gambling, I want to take whatever legal ways I can do to get ahead of Michael. I don't want an average result. I want a better than average result. And if I didn't feel that way, I wouldn't be a successful gambler. So being nice all the time tends to give you an average result or a less than average result simply because other people aren't so nice.
Well, that's a valid point. You know, I think I can say with a straight face that I have never even cheated in a board game, say in Monopoly, in my entire life. I feel that strongly about it. And there was a case in one of your Sex, Lies, and Video Poker books.
Yes.
Where the contest at the Palms was who could earn the most points.
Yes.
And the character in that story,
yes,
basically did something that I thought was lying, and it's something that I wouldn't have done. And you probably remember the detail. I don't know that we have enough time to get into it, but that's the kind of thing I feel strongly about. And if someone says, how many points did you earn, I'm either going to tell them truthfully or say I'm not going to tell you.
Well, this actually is, there was no actual lie, but they sold some of their points. And so when somebody came over to look at their card reader to find out what their point balance was, the number of points that was actually there was not the same as what was there at the start of the show. And so they came to the wrong conclusion. So as a player, I thought that was a rather clever shenanigan, and I did not see anything wrong with that. But being nice leads you to like being a readable card player. I suspect if you... Jason will say that you're the easiest poker player to play against because you're totally readable, because you're nice all the time, which is maybe good to have you as a friend, but not such a good recommendation as a gambler.
Well, I have nothing against putting out false tells and try to deceive your opponent in poker a little bit. And I think I'm not the worst poker player out there. I think he would say that. But it's just that that's an area of my game I could use work on. It has nothing to do with honesty, I think.
Oh, okay. Well, good. So that's a game where actually some sort of cheating is actually part of the game. All right. So that's it for tonight. We wish you lots of royal flushes, and we'll see you next week.
Good night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford. Archived versions of past shows may be found on bobdancer.com and wizardofodds.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford are both on Facebook and welcome your input or questions. Our sponsors are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the Palms Casino Resort, the website videopoker.com and the website wizardofodds.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.